20, Rossi said bluntly. I'm waiting for a ruling from Coruscant. But until they send one, I have no choice but to suspend you from duty.
Eli caught his breath.
Ma'am, you're...
He broke off as Rossi shifted her glare to him.
You have something to say, Ensign?
He does not, Thrawn said, throwing a warning look at Eli. I presume I will be left behind on Ancien while you continue your patrol?
Yes,
Rossi said, looking extra annoyed at the fact that she hadn't gotten to deliver that bit of the message herself.
Whether you're confined to quarters will be up to Admiral Wiskovis. Dismissed!
Eli clenched his teeth.
This was completely unfair.
He opened his mouth to say so. Rossi got there first.
One word out of you, Ensign, she warned, and you'll stay here with him.
That won't be necessary, Captain, Thrawn said. I am certain Ensign Vanto will be of great value to you on the remainder of your patrol.
Are you now? Rossi said. On second thought, I can hardly deprive my special duty lieutenant of his aid. Now can I? Congratulations, Vanto. You've just been assigned shore leave. Extended shore leave.
Eli felt his stomach knot.
What the hell?
Barlin will fly you down to the base, Rossi said.
Her eyes were still on Eli, as if she still expected some comment or protest. Again, Eli knew better.
I'll tell Wiskovis to expect you. Dismissed!
They left the office, Thrawn silent, Eli silently seething. What had that been all about? Because it had been deliberate. Rossi might not realize it, but then she hadn't spent as much time with Thrawn as Eli had. To Eli, the signs had been clear as day. The Chiss had deliberately maneuvered the captain into kicking Eli off the Blood Crow along with him. But why? Why would he do that? Had he manipulated Rossi just for the fun or challenge of it? Or was there something else going on behind Thrawn's glowing red eyes? Could it be that he was so afraid of losing his aid that he didn't dare let Rossi or anyone else aboard the Blood Crow see what Eli could actually do? To be honest, Eli had only a vague idea himself what that could be. He was good with numbers and supply figures. Hell, he was extremely good with them. But whether he could show any of that talent during the presumably brief time he would be out from under Thrawn's shadow was questionable at best.
My apologies, Ensign Vanto,
Thrawn said quietly into Eli's tangled thoughts.
I realize you wish to return to the Blood Crow. Under normal circumstances, I would have been pleased to allow you to show Captain Rossi and the others the depth and range of your abilities. But conditions here are not normal.
Are conditions ever normal in the Imperial Navy, sir?
Eli growled. Still, he could feel curiosity stirring through his resentment. There was an intensity in Thrawn's tone that was oddly contagious.
What's particularly abnormal about this one?
Captain Rossi is correct. The Tabanagas is of great value, and therefore of great interest, Thrawn said. If we are to find the Dromedar before the cylinders are removed, we must move quickly.
I heard the ISB is sending an interrogator,
Eli said, his stomach tightening in distaste. The Imperial Security Bureau was a necessary part of keeping order, but it sometimes seemed to go out of its way to be disliked, mistrusted, and feared.
I doubt the pirates will have many secrets left after he's done with them.
That is indeed the ISB's reputation, Thrawn said. But the interrogator might not arrive in time, or may not extract the necessary information quickly enough. Remember, we have only 4 days before Angel will notice his ship's failure to reappear and become suspicious.
Or at least get mad.
Eli frowned sideways at Thrawn, as it suddenly hit him.
You're going to interrogate them?
Assuming I can persuade Admiral Wiskovius to permit me, Thrawn said. Tell me, what do we already know?
Eli waved a hand. Pretty much nothing.
Thrawn remained silent. Eli clenched his teeth.
Fine,
he said with a sigh. Another game that Thrawn was very good at.
We know they were 6 days away from the rendezvous, including a stop to drop us and the other prisoners somewhere. As you said, that leaves us 4 days to get wherever they were going. But we don't even know which direction to look.
We have captured the sensor data from the pirate ship, Thrawn reminded him. Eli shook his head.
You can't tell from the departure vector where a ship is going.
True, Thrawn said. But it would have been inefficient to leave in the entirely opposite direction. Especially as they know they have limited time before the Dromedar's disappearance becomes general knowledge. We may therefore make an initial assumption that their destination is within a cone of no more than 90 degrees centered around their departure vector. Eli pursed his lips. And that cone covered their current location at Ancien. So at least getting to Signy's destination in 4 days wasn't completely out of the question. Wherever there was, on that they still didn't have a clue.
What else do we know? Thrawn pressed.
What did Angel call their rendezvous?
Eli had to search his memory.
He called it the Trapo, he said. I presume you've already looked for a planet by that name?
Yes, Thrawn said. There is no planet or major city listed in the registry. But note that he called it the Trapo, not simply Trapo. That may imply a colloquial or slang term.
A term for what?
I do not yet know, Thrawn said. But I believe that with the right questions, we may learn that. What else do we know?
Eli shrugged.
We have the faces of our prisoners. But even if they haven't altered or deleted their data files, and a lot of criminals do exactly that, it would take days or weeks to sort through all the planetary records and figure out who they are.
We may also have the pirates' own name for themselves, Thrawn pointed out. Do you remember? I asked you about it at the time.
You mean Kulos? Eli asked, frowning. I thought that was just some slang word.
I believe it is more than that, Thrawn said. Angel reacted too strongly to my interest in the word for it to have been innocent or harmless.
I didn't notice any reaction.
It was somewhat subtle.
I'll take your word for it, Eli said, starting to feel some cautious excitement.
A mid-rim base like Ancien might not have complete files on the Empire's citizens, but it should have a list of the major criminal organizations within its jurisdiction.
Have you looked them up?
I have, Thrawn said. There is nothing listed under that name.
Oh, Eli said, feeling his excitement fade.
But there are several possible connections I may be able to exploit, Thrawn continued. We shall see once I am able to speak with them.
So what do you want me to do? Eli asked. I assume you've maneuvered Rossi into leaving me here for a reason.
Two reasons, Thrawn said. I need you to monitor my interrogation. There may be a point where you will be uniquely useful.
All right,
Eli said, wondering what Thrawn could possibly mean by that. Uniquely useful wasn't a term anyone had ever applied to him.
And the second reason?
Thrawn was silent a moment. For what I am planning, I may need a witness, he said quietly. You, Ensign Vanto, will be that witness. The three pirates are expressionless as they walk into their side of the interrogation room in single file. Each looks around the room as he enters, noting the gray metal walls, ceiling, and floor. Each also quickly spots the interrogation desk beyond the transparent barrier that bisects the room.
Thrawn waited until they were seated. Then he touched the intercom control set into his desk. On both sides of the barrier, indicator lights blinked on.
"Good evening," he said, speaking toward the microphone. "I am Lieutenant Thrawn." None of the three speak in response, but their facial heat increases. The muscles in their cheeks and throats and around their eyes shift between sullenness and hostility. The larger body muscles beneath their prison clothing twitch and tighten in distinct patterns.
"You are no doubt wondering why you are here," Thrawn continued. "I wish to offer you a deal."
Their facial glows briefly intensify, then fade to their previous levels.
"You don't believe me, of course," Thrawn said. "But it is true. We have a saying, grasp the useful, let the useless fly. You three are the useless."
"And you can go plop yourself straight back to Pandora,"
the tallest of the three retorted.
There is a distinctive twang to his voice, a twang that had become apparent during the passage to Ancien. It is not identical to Vonto's accent, but with strong similarities, likely indicating similar wild space roots.
"If you came here to insult us, you're wasting your time."
"I intended no insults," Thrawn said. "On the contrary, I am impressed that successors of the Pirate Queen Ka'ana still operate throughout the galaxy."
The pirate's facial heat increases dramatically. Their eyes widen, their throat muscles stiffen. They immediately try to hide their reactions, but they are only partially successful. And it is already too late.
"You surely did not believe that you were unnoticed," Thrawn continued. "Indeed, Grand Moff Tarkin has long noted that remnants of Ka'ana's marauders had escaped their captain's fate. I've been in contact with Tarkin, and he has expressed a desire to come to Ancien and deal personally with this last trace of his old enemy."
"We have no idea what you're talking about,"
the pirate spokesman said.
"A brave but useless bluff," Thrawn said. "However, as I stated, I would prefer to trade you for your leader. Grand Moff Tarkin might not agree, but I am here, and he is not. The true irony is that your leader, Angel, holds much the same philosophy as I do."
"What do you mean?"
"You surely noted which of your colleagues were selected to travel with him to Signy's rendezvous," Thrawn said. "More important, you surely noted which of you were not chosen. You and the remainder who were left to die."
One of the pirates looks at their spokesman, his expression tense. The spokesman ignores him, but his own facial glow intensifies.
"From both short-term and long-term perspectives, it was a reasonable decision," Thrawn continued. "In the short term, Angel loses several experienced crew. But your capture and interrogation gain him additional time to remove the Tabana cylinders from the Dromedar. In the long term, he pairs away those he deems no longer useful to his goals."
"And the Marauder?"
the spokesman shot back.
"Sorry, Blueface, but Angel's not stupid enough to dump a perfectly good frigate for nothing."
"As I said, long-term perspective," Thrawn replied.
Now they had the pirate ship's name.
"Signy has demonstrated the efficiency of his more subtle approach to ship capture. He has no doubt persuaded Angel that the Dromedar will serve him better than the Marauder. Certainly a freighter permits a more stealthy approach to its victims than an armed frigate."
On the desk, his datapad lit up with a message. Frigate Marauder linked to 5 hijackings under ID code Eligence Hope.
Especially one that has come under as much scrutiny as Eligin's Hope. He added.
You're talking Parth spit.
The pirate spokesman's voice is low and contemptuous. I applaud your tenacity, Thrawn said. But surely you can see it is of no value. I already know too much for you to save yourselves. And once Tarkin arrives, we will know everything. Unless you choose to accept my offer, you are lost. The three pirates look urgently at one another.
Let's hear the deal,
the spokesman said.
I will give you and your fellow prisoners a civilian transport, Thrawn said. It is partially derelict, but it should safely convey you from this sector before requiring repairs. In return, you will identify the system where Signy and Angel have taken the Dromedar to remove the Tabana.
What guarantee do we have that you won't take the information and turn us over to Tarkin anyway?
I offer my word, Thrawn said. I also offer simple logic. You three are too young to have been any of Ka'ana's original pirates. Tarkin's lingering vengeance will not therefore be directed specifically toward you. More important, I know Tarkin. He will take extra pleasure in the fact that Angel would know you were freed as a reward for betraying him.
You can't know Tarkin very well if you think he ever shows mercy to anyone.
Precisely, Thrawn said. His reputation does not permit such actions. That is why I will release you on my own initiative. He will thus be able to take full pleasure in delivering the news to Angel without the need to make the decision himself. He paused. The pirates did not speak. That is my offer, Thrawn said. I will wait while you discuss it among yourselves.
He touched the intercom switch again, and the indicator lights went out. The pirates weren't fooled. They had probably been interrogated in such places before, and knew that the intercom remained live despite the evidence of the indicators. Thrawn had played all his cards, but the pirates had a card of their own to play. Leaning close, they began speaking softly together, in a language they would have learned growing up in wild space. A language that was used only there and in the unknown regions. A language that had never been programmed into Republic or Imperial translators or protocol droids. A language they could reasonably expect no Imperial had ever even heard of. Sibisti.
What do you think?
The spokesman asked the others.
You think we can trust him?
He's an Imperial,
the second scoffed.
Of course not.
Who cares?
The third retorted.
You heard him. Tarkin's coming.
The spokesman snorts.
You listen too much to Angel's ghost stories. Even Tarkin can't be that bad.
No? How come Angel keeps telling the stories? I tell you, Tarkin's pure evil.
Speaking of evil,
the second man said,
what do you think Angel's going to do if he finds out we sold him to Blueface?
Good point,
the spokesman said.
But maybe we can have this both ways. Let's take the offer, spin Blueface some froth, then hightail it to the Trapo and warn Angel. If we're fast enough, we should be able to get there before Tarkin or even Blueface can chase us down.
Unless they've already cracked the static lock,
the third man warned.
Then we'd get there just in time for our ship to fall apart and leave us stuck until Tarkin catches up with us.
You think they're going to find an ub-dub squash who can do slice work like that?
The spokesman countered, his voice heavy with contempt.
Not a chance. Angel's gonna have to bring in someone from outside.
Maybe Signy already did.
Signy was supposed to get the static lock off before we ever came aboard.
the spokesman said.
Don't worry. We've got plenty of time to get there.
Then let's take the offer,
the second man said.
Give him, I don't know, give him something, and get the hell out of here.
Before Tarkin gets here?
The spokesman suggested.
Go ahead and laugh,
the third man growled.
I'm not.
Fine.
The spokesman looked up at Thrawn and lifted his hand.
Hey,
he called in Basic.
You, Imperial.
Thrawn tapped the intercom switch.
Have you made a decision?
We'll take your offer,
the spokesman said.
Angel and Signy went to Cartherston, on a planet named Kytum. You need coordinates?
Thank you. We can find it, Thrawn assured him. Anything else?
Just that you better hurry if you're going to catch them,
the spokesman warned.
They won't be there any longer than they have to.
I agree, Thrawn said. Thank you for your cooperation. The guards waiting outside will escort you to your new transport.
And the rest of the crew?
The spokesman asked.
Your companions are already on their way, Thrawn said. One more thing. You have been given a second chance. I suggest you use it to remake your lives for the better.
No need to preach, brother,
the spokesman said as they rose from their chairs.
Trust me, you'll never hear from us again.
They filed out. Thrawn watched them leave, and as the door closed behind them, he stood and faced the door, exiting his side of the room. It slid open to reveal Vanto and Admiral Wiskovis.
Admiral?
Lieutenant,
Wiskovis nodded in return.
That was about as impressive a performance as I've ever seen.
Thank you, sir,
Thrawn said.
Do we have it?
We do,
Vanto said with satisfaction.
Uba, in Barca Sector. It's a nice quiet place to park a freighter for a while. It's the right distance from where they nabbed the dromedar, and the insulting slang term for it is Ub-Dub. Squash is also the local slang term for the inhabitants, who are not generally considered technological geniuses.
He smiled tightly.
And there are a bunch of major merchant centers on the northern continent, which local slang refers to as trading posts, or for short, trepos.
We have it, all right, Wiskovis agreed. Not that I have the slightest idea why we have it. How did you know this group used to work with Ka'ana?
I did not know for certain, Thrawn said. It was only a guess, based on their name.
What name?
Vanto asked.
He frowns in confusion.
Angel?
Kulos, Thrawn said.
The name Angel gave their group. I heard that as Q-less, or a group without a Q.
After we arrived, while we were waiting for Captain Rossi to return, I did a search of known criminal groups. There were a number that included a Q reference, but Ka'ana's marauders seemed the most likely to have their resources, the history, and the contacts to deal with the stolen Tabanagas.
Seems like kind of a long shot.
It was,
Thrawn agreed.
But Ka'ana used to sign her thefts with a coded reference to her name. It seemed reasonable that the remnant of her gang would also enjoy leaving such clues.
Still a long shot. Wiskovis shakes his head. What if you'd been wrong?
There would have been no loss,
Thrawn said.
The ISB interrogator would have arrived, and the questioning would have proceeded on schedule. All would have been as if I had not made an attempt.
Except you wouldn't have left yourself wide open to a court-martial, Wiskovis said.
His voice is grim.
I should at least release the transport myself.
I cannot allow you to do that,
Thrawn said.
Excuse me?
Wiskovis draws himself up stiffly. His expression hardens, His throat muscles tightening. Vanto's expression holds sudden discomfort.
You can't let me do that.
I think what Lieutenant Thrawn meant, sir, is that he strongly urges you to remain as far outside the situation as possible,
Vanto put in quickly.
I believe his goal is to bring any blowback on himself, leaving everyone else out of it.
Very noble, Waskovis said.
His expression is still stiff and angry.
And if I choose to do otherwise, this is my base, Lieutenant. What happens here is ultimately my responsibility.
True,
Thrawn acknowledged.
But there is still much that can go wrong. And the balance of success and failure is still undetermined. I would not wish you to bear any blame for my plan and actions.
Or accept any acclaim for its success?
Vanto winces.
I don't think that's what Lieutenant Thrawn meant, sir,
he said. Well, then maybe I should hear that from the lieutenant himself, Waskovis said.
If this succeeds, I would, of course, freely acknowledge your support, Thrawn said. But if it fails, be advised that when I am brought before court-martial, Ensign Vanto will testify that I acted alone.
Excuse me? Waskovis said again.
His eyes widen as he looks at Vanto. His facial heat increases, and the muscles in his cheeks tighten.
Did he just say you were prepared to commit perjury, Ensign?
Yes, sir. He did,
Vanto said.
The tension in his voice increases, his expression showing extreme discomfort.
As I said, his goal is to protect you and your career from whatever comes of this.
For 3 seconds, Waskovis remains silent. There is no easing of his tension and anger.
This discussion is not over, he said at last. But right now we have work to do. When do you want me to send a force to Uba?
You should wait until the released prisoners have made the jump to lightspeed, Thrawn said. We do not want them noting the preparations and becoming suspicious. You should also contact the ISB agent and alert him to reroute his ship to Uba.
And then?
Lieutenant Thrawn only promised to let them go, Vanto said.
His tension also is not eased.
He never said we wouldn't recapture them if they went to Uba.
Fine, Waskovis said. Anything else?
I would also suggest you send a force to the other site they mentioned. The city Cartherston, on Kytum.
I thought they just said that to throw us off track.
That was certainly its primary purpose, Thrawn said. But the name came too quickly and too easily. We may find that Kytum was where the Dromedar's crew was to be released.
And Signy said his people would be watching,
Vanto said.
Yes,
Thrawn said.
It may be possible to learn who exactly his people are.
If we can catch them. Waskovis started to turn back to the doorway, then paused. You didn't really contact Grand Moff Tarkin, did you?
No,
Thrawn said.
I've never met the man.
Probably a good thing, Waskovis said. And if this is the way you talk to superiors, Lieutenant, you'd better hope you never do. Come on. We have some pirates to capture.
Chapter 10
One whose path has taken a new turn is often initially disoriented. But as time passes, and the path continues steadily in its new direction, there is a tendency to believe that it will remain so forever, with no further turns. Nothing is further from the truth. A path once bent is always susceptible to new changes, particularly when the original change came from manipulation by an outside force.
So,
Juihir Madras said, taking a careful sip of the calf Arinda had poured for her.
Are you going to Kor Square for the weekend? Or are you going to be a Stickley and just hang out and bash?
Probably a Stickley,
Arinda said regretfully, sniffing at her own mug. Juihir liked her calf much hotter than Arinda did, so that was how she always prepared it when her friend dropped into the office. Easier to let hers cool than watch Juihir trying not to complain about the tepidness of her own drink.
Kor Square is awfully expensive.
That it is,
Juihir agreed soberly.
I thought you used to sleep in your airspeeder when you went there.
That was before Wapsburg got caught doing spice in a public parking area,
Arinda reminded her.
After that, Ranking banned us from sleeping or living in any of his vehicles.
I didn't realize it was a complete ban,
Juihir said.
I thought he just wanted his people not to get caught doing anything illegal or embarrassing.
Arinda shrugged.
A complete ban is always easier.
And more brainless,
Juihir said.
And you can't stay in his main office?
The office sleeps 10 if you push it,
Arinda said.
I'm currently number 18 on the waiting list, so no.
Ah,
Juihir said again.
Well, Ascension Week's kind of a big deal.
Arinda nodded, sniffing again at her calf. A big deal for the average Coruscant resident, but even more of a big deal for the political elite.
Grand events like this were the perfect screen for the high and powerful to mingle with one another, and Ascension Week was the ultimate in such things. The week-long festivities that climaxed in Empire Day drew swarms of people to the center of Imperial society as politicians made quiet contacts and deals without the obviousness of going to one another's offices or the less obvious but theoretically traceable route of comm calls.
A million people and a million possibilities,
and Arinda had worked very hard to take full advantage of both. She'd started small, making conversation with other senatorial aides and assistants. But over the last couple of festivals, she'd also made contact with a low-level journalist and the office manager from one of the mid-rim moffs. This year, she'd hoped to leverage both of those one step up to their respective bosses. Now, with Ranking's new ban on what his staff had jokingly referred to as portable housing, it looked like that wasn't going to happen. And she couldn't help but wonder how much of the ban had been Wapsper's indiscretion, and how much was Rankings finally noticing Arinda's own political machinations, and taking steps to block them. Though to be honest, she had to admit that it was highly unlikely. But then, so much on Coruscant tended toward the unlikely. Her work at Rankings' Citizen Assistance Office in Bartanish 4, known universally to its inhabitants as Bash 4, had started off a little rocky. The mostly working-class population was very much in the same mold as the miners of Lothal, but even with such commonplace people, her outer rim accent and lack of Coruscant breeding had opened her up to both amusement and contempt. But Arinda had kept at it, and slowly she'd gained their acceptance and trust. And most unlikely of all, along the way she'd even made a genuine friend.
So I guess we're going to have to do something about that,
Juihir said.
She took another sip, then set down her mug. Okay, I concede. It is possible to make this stuff too hot.
Told you,
Arinda said, smiling. She'd been in Bash 4 over a year, and was just starting to win over the populace when Juihir had come in asking for help finding an apartment. Arinda had located one in her own building, and later that week had helped carry in her meager collection of belongings. Juihir had thanked her with dinner at an incredible little blink-and-miss-it restaurant Arinda hadn't even known existed, and from then on, they'd been inseparable.
Not worth stressing about. There will be celebrations here, too, you know.
Juihir burbled a rude sound through her lips.
Right. Bash 4's Empire Day festivities? 10 minutes worth of fireworks, 2 minutes of which are duds from last year, and 3 minutes of all the airspeeders honking their horns. Listen to Palpatine's pre-recorded speech, 2 more minutes of honking, and everyone goes home. Big whoop.
She shook her head.
It's too bad you don't have a friend who has a friend who has an apartment within view of the Imperial Palace.
Arinda gave a little snort.
If you mean Senator Ranking...
Oh, wait.
Juahir interrupted, brightening.
That's right. You do.
She pointed a finger at herself.
Me.
What in the world are you talking about?
Arinda asked, frowning.
I'm talking about Kor Square,
Juahir said, clearly enjoying herself immensely.
I know a guy who just snagged a place in Sestra Towers.
Sestra Towers?
Arinda gasped.
Sestra was a luxury apartment complex, close enough to the center of Federal District that it was visible from Ranking's main office.
You're joking. Nope,
Juahir assured her.
It'll be a little cozy, but we can fit you in.
You're serious?
Arinda said, almost not daring to believe it.
You sure your friend won't mind?
Already cleared it with him,
Juahir said.
There's one catch, though.
She leveled a finger at Arinda.
We'll be responsible for transportation and lodging. You'll be responsible for getting us into at least one exclusive party or reception. Deal?
Deal,
Arinda said, smiling back.
Not a problem. I can get up to 2 other guests in on my senator's aid pass.
No, no, no,
Juahir chided.
You never tell the crowd how the trick is done. So, can you sneak out a little early?
Sure.
Arinda checked her chrono.
As boss of this office, I'm giving myself the rest of the day off.
I wish I had friends in high places.
You do. Sestra Towers.
And don't you forget it,
Juahir said.
How long will it take you to pack a bag?
5 minutes,
Arinda promised, shutting down her computer and keying for messages to forward to her comm.
Come on, I'll drive us over. You can get your bag while I pack, and we'll meet back at my airspeeder.
I said I'd provide transportation,
Juahir reminded her.
I know, Arinda said. I've also seen your airspeeder. We're taking mine.
The Federal District, known informally as the Core of Coruscant, or even more informally, Kor Square, was the undisputed center of the galaxy, both politically and socially. The Senate was there, as were the Imperial Palace, all the major ministries, and the combined headquarters of the Army and the Imperial Navy. The elite of the Empire lived and worked here. So did those who had ambitions of joining that noble society, as well as those who carried out the elite's will.
So, what's your excuse?
Arinda asked Driller Mardap as they rode the crowded Airbus toward the Alessandre Hotel.
She means, how did you score an apartment here?
Juahir translated.
As in, whose pet Tuca did you have to feed, walk, and polish?
Oh, is that what she meant?
Driller asked, grinning. He grinned a lot, Arinda had noticed in the brief time she'd known him. Fortunately, he had the teeth and dimples for it.
Sorry to disappoint you, but no Tuca was involved. I happen to have an uncle who's a senior staff officer at Royal Imperial, and who happens to be off-planet for 3 months. Being as I'm his favorite nephew...
Translation, he's the nephew who got in his bid before any of the other relatives did.
Juahir interjected.
Favorite nephew of all those who asked him,
Driller amended dryly.
I got to move in.
So what are you doing?
Arinda asked.
Work-wise, I mean.
Nothing fancy, I'm afraid. I'm with an advocacy group that petitions senators and ministers on behalf of ordinary citizens.
Ah,
Orinda said, mentally crossing him off her checklist. Advocacy groups sometimes had access to the powerful, but they had no power of their own. Nothing there for her to cultivate.
Sounds a lot like what Orinda does in Bash 4, Juahir said.
Pretty similar, yes, Driller said. Except that you're handling local people and problems, while we speak on behalf of people from other planets. Sometimes on behalf of the whole planet, in fact. I thought that was what senators were supposed to do, Orinda said.
Emphasis on the supposed to part, Driller said.
Oh, I'm sorry. That sounded nastier than I meant it to. You know better than anyone how easy it is for someone to fall through the cracks. That's our job, filling in cracks.
Sounds so exciting when you put it that way, Juahir said. So, any idea which of these parties the Emperor is supposed to be hosting?
I'm not sure he's going to host any of them, Orinda said. That rumor goes around every year.
She squinted toward the hotel they were rapidly approaching.
I don't see any Imperial guards anywhere, so if it's happening, it's not happening here.
That's okay, Juahir said. We're going to hit a lot more parties before the week's up, right?
As many as you can handle, Orinda promised. Or at least until we get thrown out.
Hey, that can be fun too.
The Alessandre's grand ballroom was supposed to be one of the biggest in Core Square, with a cluster of smaller rooms surrounding it. The arrangement made it ideal for both large gatherings and the smaller, more intimate get-togethers that inevitably spun off from big crowds. The security men at the door gave Orinda's ID a good, hard look, and gave Juahir and Driller even harder ones, but passed all three of them without comment.
Wow,
Juahir breathed, looked around as Orinda led the way through the meandering flow of people.
I feel very underdressed.
You're the guest of a lowly senator's aide, Orinda reminded her. You're not expected to have a 1,000-credit gown.
I'm sure there are plenty of us around, Driller added. You just can't see them for the glare of the gems from everyone else. So, who exactly is here, Orinda?
It's a pretty fair mix,
Orinda said, studying the little conversational knots that had formed amid the eddies and flows of partygoers.
Over there are the governors of a couple of the minor core worlds. There's a midrim moth over there, and I see at least 6 or 7 senators.
And you know all of them? Driller asked. Can you introduce me?
I don't really know them, but I've met a lot of them, Orinda said,
though she'd certainly been trying to know most of them better.
Senator Ranking sometimes sends me out to deliver confidential data cards when I'm here in Core Square.
So that's where you disappear to all the time,
Juahir commented.
It's hardly all the time,
Orinda corrected her severely.
Maybe 4 days a month if I'm lucky.
Yeah, but for every one of those days, I get 20 calls wondering why you're not in your office fixing someone's problem.
What are they calling you for?
Orinda asked, frowning. This was the first she'd heard about this.
You don't work there.
No, but a surprising number of people in our building know we're friends,
Juahir said dryly.
They figure that I'm responsible for you or some such.
Ridiculous,
Orinda said.
You're barely responsible for yourself.
If you two could stop bickering for just a minute, Driller cut in. Would one of you care to explain that?
Orinda followed his pointing finger. Across the room was another conversation knot, this one consisting of just 4 people. But they were definitely an eye-catching group. One of them was a white-haired man with a matching mustache, wearing the white tunic and insignia plaque of an ISB colonel. The second man had his back toward Orinda, but his formal outfit matched one owned by Senator Rankin. The third man was young and wore the uniform and plaque of a Navy ensign. And the fourth man...
wasn't a man at all. He was human-shaped and had human features, but his skin was blue. His hair was blue-black, and his eyes were glowing red. And his insignia plaque identified him as a senior lieutenant.
"I've never seen anything like that before," Driller continued. "What is he? Some kind of Pantoran with an eye condition?"
"Now that's just rude," Juahir chided him. But she was staring at the strange being just as hard as he was. "Arinda, any ideas?"
"Sure," Arinda said. "Let's go over and ask."
Juahir's gasp was audible even over the hum of conversation filling the ballroom.
"You're kidding."
"Not at all," Arinda said.
"Actually, I think that's Senator Rankin, so I can just pretend I was checking in to see if he needed anything."
"I thought you were off duty."
"Senator's aides are never off duty," Arinda said.
"Come on."
And if it wasn't Rankin, she decided, his outfit tagged him as someone of similar status. Easy enough to flip a humorous case of mistaken identity into a new contact among the elite. The contingency plan proved unnecessary. The man was, in fact, Senator Rankin. The first thing Arinda had learned as his aide was to never interrupt a conversation. The second thing she'd learned was how to edge herself into those conversations. In this case, the best approach was to position herself at a discreet distance, outside the group, but inside the edge of the senator's peripheral vision. Eventually, she knew, he would notice her. In this instance, the wait was barely 10 seconds.
"Ah, Arinda,"
Rankin said, interrupting himself and holding out an inviting hand.
"I was hoping to run into you. Your comm said you were here, but I didn't want to interrupt you with a call unless I had to."
"Not a problem, Senator," Arinda said. "What can I do for you?"
"I need a favor."
Rankin half turned to the other three people.
"But I'm forgetting my manners. Colonel, Lieutenant, Ensign, this is Arinda Price, one of my aides. Miss Price, this is Colonel Wolf Yularen of the Imperial Security Bureau. Senior Lieutenant Thrawn, a rising star in the Navy, and Ensign Eli Vanto, the Lieutenant's aide and translator."
"Honored, noble sirs,"
Arinda said, bowing respectfully.
"Colonel Yularen was just telling me about an intriguing operation the Lieutenant and Ensign were recently involved with out in the Mid-Rim,"
Rankin continued.
"Really?"
Arinda said, putting some fascination, most of it genuine, into her voice. The elite loved to hear themselves talk, but most of the time their stories were worth listening to.
"Really?"
Yularen confirmed, his eyes flickering over her shoulder to Juahir and Driller, probably making sure they were out of eavesdropping range.
"The lieutenant more or less single-handedly captured a pirate ship and most of its crew, and saved a valuable shipment of Tabana gas on top of it."
"It was hardly single-handed, Colonel,"
the non-human said. His voice was calm and respectful, with a quiet underpinning of confidence and intelligence.
"You had only 4 crew with you, including Ensign Vanto,"
Yularen said.
"I call that close enough to single-handed. What do you say, Ensign? Was I overstating the case?"
"Not at all, sir,"
Ensign Vanto said politely. He looked and sounded a little pained, as if he had no idea what he was doing here and just wanted to go home. Which, from his distinctive accent, Arinda guessed to be somewhere in the Outer Rim, or even Wild Space, which likely made his forced presence here among the elite even more awkward and uncomfortable. Arinda herself had worked very hard to get rid of her own Outer Rim accent, but she still felt self-conscious about her roots.
"Ensign Vanto is perhaps too modest about his and the others' contributions," Thrawn said. "But what matters is the result.
Well, however it untangles, congratulations to you both,
Ranking said.
I presume you're here on Coruscant for commendation?
He raised his eyebrows.
Or promotions?
Not exactly,
Yularen said.
There's some additional data work, shall we say, that needs to be looked at.
How serious are we talking?
Ranking asked, eyeing Thrawn.
Serious enough,
Yularen said.
But I'm not particularly worried. I was an admiral during the Clone Wars, and I still have friends in high places.
And are no doubt making a few more tonight,
Arinda murmured. Yularen looked at her with fresh interest.
Very perceptive, Miss Price,
he complimented her.
Yes, that's exactly why I'm putting the lieutenant through the Coruscant social grinder. I think he did a remarkable job, and I want to make sure as much of the Senate knows about it as possible.
Well, I personally will be sure to look into the details when I get a chance,
Ranking said.
But right now, as I said, I need Ms. Price to run an errand for me. Arinda, I need to leave, but I also need to get a data card to Moff Gotti. You know who he is, right?
Yes, sir, of course,
Arinda said. Actually, she'd made quite a few private deliveries to Gotti over the past 2 years. Gotti was always too busy to talk to her during those visits, but she'd always made a point of engaging his reception and staff people in friendly conversation. This might finally be her chance to make contact with the Moff himself.
Good,
Ranking said.
He'll need to load it into a secure data pad, download the files, then return the card to you.
Understood,
Arinda said. A slightly unusual procedure, but still one she'd occasionally done before.
Do you want me to take it to your office when he's finished?
Please,
Ranking said.
Just put it in the drop slot.
He nodded to Yularen and the others.
And now I really must take my leave. Colonel, good luck. Lieutenant and Ensign, even better luck.
He turned and began weaving his way through the crowd toward the main entrance.
If you'll excuse us, Ms. Price,
Yularen said with a courteous bow.
I have a few more people I want to introduce Senior Lieutenant Thrawn to before we head across Kor Square to the next reception.
Of course, Colonel,
Arinda said, bowing in return.
Lieutenant, Ensign.
She turned and headed away, noting that Yularen and the other officers were heading toward a knot of other senators.
I thought you were going to introduce us,
Driller complained, as he and Juihir came up beside her.
Sorry,
Arinda apologized.
Wasn't really an opportunity. Next group.
So, who is he?
Juihir asked.
And what is he?
Mostly what he is in trouble with the High Command,
Arinda said.
We didn't get any further than that.
Interesting, Driller said. High Command doesn't usually bother with junior officers. Wonder whose Tuca he ran over.
You can ask your uncle when he gets back,
Arinda said.
All I know is that when someone like Colonel Yularen says additional data work, with a pause between the words, he's talking about something serious.
Or more precisely, not talking about it, Driller said.
Exactly,
Arinda said.
But that's Thrawn's problem. My problem is that I have to go to work.
Yeah, we saw the handoff,
Juihir said.
Delivery, right?
Right.
And during an Ascension Week party, too?
Juihir shook her head.
Ranking's a slave driver.
You want us to come with you?
No, that's okay,
Arinda said, craning her neck. She couldn't see Gotti, but if he was here, it shouldn't take long to track him down.
I'll be back as quick as I can. Have fun. Enjoy yourselves. And don't get drunk on the swirly dips.
Swirly dips have alcohol in them?
Juahir asked, brightening.
They do here,
Arinda said.
Stay out of trouble, okay?
Ranking had been right about seeing Gaudi earlier. With the moth's distinctive appearance, Arinda spotted him within 3 minutes of starting her search.
So, Ranking has you working tonight, does he?
Gaudi asked, fingering the data card. His eyes were bright and intense, Arinda noted a little uneasily. Swirly dips or something stronger. Hopefully he was functional enough to get this over with quickly so she could get back to working the party.
Yes, Your Excellency,
she said.
But I'm sure he wouldn't have interrupted you if it wasn't important.
And he even sent you,
Gaudi said, smiling crookedly.
Well, come on.
He turned, sending his patterned red and yellow cloak swirling through the air around him as he headed for the lifts.
My secure data pad's in my suite,
he added as Arinda hurried to catch up.
It'll just take a minute, and then you can get back to enjoying yourself.
Yes, Your Excellency,
Arinda said, glancing around as they worked their way through the crowd. She'd never even seen pictures of what the Alessandre suites looked like. If the ballroom was anything to go by, Gaudi's suite would be well worth a quick visit.
It was. Get yourself a drink if you'd like,
Gaudi said as he crossed the plush carpet of the main living area toward one of the side doors.
The droid can fix anything you can name.
Thank you, Your Excellency,
Arinda said, eyeing the extensive bar off to one side and the exquisitely restored classic Leisure Mech C5 bartender droid standing motionless beside it. She was tempted, but for the moment at least, she was officially on duty. Instead, she contented herself with looking at the carvings, the artwork, and the decorative panel inlays. This room alone was twice the size of her apartment, and probably cost her entire year's salary per night.
I'm glad it was you he sent,
Gaudi called from the other room.
I've seen you in my office several times over the past few months, usually playing courier. Ranking obviously has a high opinion of you.
Thank you, Your Excellency.
As, of course, do I,
Gaudi added.
A very high opinion indeed. Tell me, have you enjoyed working for him?
It's been very interesting,
Arinda said, frowning. That wasn't the kind of question she was usually asked. Was Gaudi just making conversation, or was something else going on?
Of course, interesting,
Gaudi said.
The most diplomatic word possible, as well as the most insipid.
He stepped back into the living area, Ranking's data card in hand, and walked back across the carpet to her.
Here you go,
he said, handing it to her.
You may take it back to him now.
Thank you, Your Excellency,
she said, frowning down at it. It looked like the one Ranking had given her, but at the same time, something about it seemed different. The color was right, and the senator's logo on the upper corner seemed correct. Could it be the weight? She hefted it gently, trying to decide. No, she realized suddenly. It was the logo. Senator Ranking's logo was etched into the surface of all the office's data cards, but the logo on this card was embossed rather than etched. This wasn't the same card she just handed Gaudi. She looked up at the moth, to find him gazing back at her, a hard-edged half-smile on his face.
Very good, Miss Price,
Gaudi said quietly.
Too bad, really.
Your Excellency?
She asked carefully.
You noticed there was something different about the data card,
Gaudi said.
A shame.